Coming up on New York Now, the governor gives his annual State of the State and budget address in Albany, where progressive measures take center stage.
Let New York lead the way again and pass the red flag law, ban bump stocks, extend the waiting period from 3 days to 10 days.
We'll have reaction from the Hart Theater and analysis at the Reporters Roundtable.
It took, I mean, at least some of the reporters by surprise, how quickly the legislature is moving. And I think the governor had to get out ahead of them. I mean, there's plenty of credit to go around, but like, who gets more credit for these things?
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. The Progressive Express is pulling out of the station, and Engineer Cuomo is rushing to leap aboard.
Our look at a news-heavy week in Albany begins with the governor's annual address. This was the ninth time Andrew Cuomo gave his State of the State speech, and first since getting reelected to a third term.
We think it's the year to fully enact a justice agenda, in the broadest sense of the word, justice, social justice, economic justice, and racial justice, and that this is the time to do it. We face real challenges in the state of New York. We have a federal government that is assaulting our values, our liberties, our rights, and our economy, literally our economy. The federal cuts to our budget would be devastating. And the federal effect on the values and liberties on New Yorkers would be devastating. And this is the moment in government that we are leading. And it is up to us to bring this state forward.
Combined with the annual budget address, you can be forgiven if the 1-hour and 21-minute speech gave you a serious case of information overload. There was a lot to pack in. Many of his more progressive policies were released in the last month. He highlighted them again, including codifying Roe v. Wade into the state's constitution, stricter gun control laws, legalizing adult-use marijuana, closing the LLC loophole and banning corporate campaign contributions, passing the Child Victims Act, allowing sports betting at upstate casinos, and congestion pricing in Lower Manhattan.
Now, on the finances for the state, we start with a $3 billion hole, largely because of the federal policies. The revenues have slowed. We believe it's attributable to the federal SALT program, which we all predicted was going to have a dramatic effect on New York. What the federal government did with SALT is it penalized New York more than any other state. New York State is the number one donor state in the United States of America. We send more money to Washington than we get back, and we send more money that we don't get back than any other state in the nation. 40 states take more than they give. So we have a federal government that is against redistribution of income among people, but they have no problem redistributing income from some states to other states, and what they did is they took from the Republican, Democratic states to give to the Republican states. And we're feeling the pain. And that's a $3 billion hole.
After the proposals, or state of the state, if you will, came the fiscal plan. The budget totals $175 billion, a 2% increase over last year's spending plan. It's a number Cuomo has more or less adhered to during his time in office. School aid is up 3.6%, and there is a 5-year extension proposed for the millionaire's tax. Now comes the real work, as budget hearings will begin next week before a final agreement is due by April 1. Before ending his speech, Cuomo noted the new legislative dynamic now in Albany, with his party controlling both legislative chambers.
I was having a conversation with Leader Stuart Cousins this morning, and she said, we have a moment in time. We have a moment in time, which is true. And when you think about it, that's all we really have, is a moment in time. 40 years we haven't had a Democratic Senate, Assembly, and Governor, besides one brief period. 40 years we have a moment in time to change the state. We can do it. It's just us. We are in control. There is no one else. And I believe that together we can do it.
We got reaction from both sides of the aisle after the speech.
I have some concerns about the proposed congestion pricing. As a Staten Islander, we already pay the highest toll in the state to get off the island. I didn't see equity for Staten Islanders. We're going to want to see that before we agree to anything else. But overall, it's a pretty ambitious agenda, and we have a pretty ambitious Senate right now. So hopefully we'll be able to come to agreement on a lot of these things.
I think it was extremely disappointing. I mean, it was the most partisan speech I think I've ever heard from a governor, and I've heard a lot of speeches for a governor. He talked about diversity and bringing people together, and this is the guy that rattled off a whole bunch of letters about L and B and this and that, but he never used the word R, which was Republican. He doesn't love Republicans or conservatives because he asked us to leave the state a while back because in some instances we don't think like him. And I think this was the type of speech which really illustrates if you have one voice, one political affiliation, from one region of the state, and I listened very carefully, what you have is crickets if you're looking for an upstate agenda for the economy and a better quality of life.
We'll have analysis from Tuesday's speech at our reporters' roundtable.
I want to thank everyone, and certainly I want to thank the members of the press for coming today. As we urge our Republican colleagues to take up our bills, I'm just kidding.
The Democrats still giddy over the fact they now control the Senate chamber for the first time since 2010. Getting right to work on Monday, they passed a series of voting reforms that include consolidating the federal and state primaries, allowing for a 9-day early voting period, and closing the LLC loophole.
We have been hibernating in this state for 10 years, and it's about time we start passing the bills that have been waiting to get passed all this time. What better way to start than by making sure people in our democracy can vote and vote easily and vote without obstruction and register to vote more easily? And we're going to start that work today on the floor of the Senate, where we're very excited to make it easier to vote early, to make it easier to vote by mail, to make it easier to vote on one primary day.
We saw record numbers of voting last year, and even in a wave election year, New York was still in the bottom 5% by voter participation in this entire country. We have 49 other states that have a consolidated primary. New York does not. 37 other states have early voting. New York does not. 27 other states have no excuse absentee voting. New York does not. 17 other states have some form of pre-registration. New York does not. And 15 other states have same-day registration. New York does not. So today, the journey begins from bringing New York from worse
to first.
From worst
to first.
From worst
to first.
Let's go get them.
The measures passed both the Senate chamber and the Assembly. The governor announced his own series of reforms at his State of the State that were not included in the Senate's package, including making Election Day a state holiday and expanding upstate voting hours.
It's been a long road, but I was thinking about this bill, which is called, of course, the Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Act, but much more than an acronym. It is the Transgender Human Rights Law for the state of New York. And I was thinking about it in terms of my daughter. And last summer, my daughter and I were at a swimming pool with some other LGBTQ families. And we were paddling along in the ice-cold water. And this little girl swam up to Sylvia, my 7-year-old. And she said, "Who's that?" And Sylvia said, "That's my daddy." And without missing a beat, the other little girl said, "Well, then where's your other daddy?" And to me, that's an example of the quantum leap forward that we've taken as a chamber, thanks to the support of so many colleagues, and we've taken as a society.
On Tuesday, both houses passed GENDA. It prevents discrimination against New Yorkers based on their gender identity and expression. The bill has been around for over a decade, but never reached the Senate floor under GOP control. Also passing was a ban on conversion therapy by a wide margin with 57 votes. The four voting no included Republicans George Amador from the Capital Region, Patrick Gallivan from Western New York, and Ken LaValle of Long Island. Democrat Simca Felder, who doesn't conference with either party currently, was also a no vote.
All right, and now I'm happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable for some analysis of the week's news by Dave Lombardo of my own paper, The Times Union, Josefa Velazquez in her first appearance in her capacity as a correspondent for The City, a new online publication that'll be starting up in a couple of weeks, and of course, my partner, Matt Ryan. All right, on Tuesday, we had the governor's combo State of the State and budget presentation, which appears to have been moved up a little. We were all kind of given the early word that it was going to be probably in the last week of January. Why do you think he moved it up?
I guess if I'm cynical and I believe that the governor wants a lot of attention, if I believe that, I look at what the legislature was doing. They were off to an early start, passing a lot of bills and big ticket items that were probably going to be in his budget. So to preempt that, potentially, if I'm a cynical observer of Albany, that looks like kind of what he did.
Is a cynic a realist, Josefa?
Well, maybe. I mean, we heard that the budget was going to be the 29th. Then it was supposed to be the weekend of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And then it got hastily pushed up. And I think surprisingly, and it took, I mean, at least some of the reporters by surprise, how quickly the legislature is moving. And I think the governor had to get out ahead of them. I mean, there's plenty of credit to go around, but like, who gets more credit for these things?
The Thursday before the speech, he was on live radio with Dr. Alan Chartok of WAMC in the Capital Region. And he stunned a lot of people, not just reporters, when he said, "Oh yeah, we're gonna do it on Tuesday," because as Josefa said, it was supposed to be on the 29th. I've heard that from multiple people. So if you want to go that cynical route that Dave first introduced us to, that might be a good reason.
So any surprises in the speech? It had been heavily previewed, without a doubt, you know, all the way back to kind of mid-December, where the governor was laying out this very strong progressive agenda. He hit all of those points once again. You know, who's going to be happy, who's going to be sad after this budget presentation?
I don't think the speech had a lot of surprises in there. The governor had been preempting it with his 100-day speech, and we knew that legalization was going to be there in some capacity. So I think a lot of it...
Legalization of recreational marijuana.
Legalization of marijuana. But a lot of it, and to his credit, goes back to his first term. Some issues, voting reforms, the codifying of Roe v. Wade, these have been perennials that have come up time and time again since the governor first got into office. So I don't think there was much there to be surprised about.
I think the surprises are things that he, you know, didn't talk about in his speech, but came up maybe during the briefing afterwards, whether it was the revelation that a lot of towns and villages were going to have their state aid cut, their direct state aid cut, that the state budget wouldn't directly fund early voting, and then, you know, my personal favorite issue, sports gambling, which got a very throwaway mention from the governor. The Division of Budget announced that their interpretation of the Constitution was that it would only be allowed sports gambling at the four upstate commercial casinos as well as the Native American casinos, preempting the opportunity to have it at internet and other potential sites. So that was another kind of minor surprise, that interpretation.
What do we know about how vicious the perennially charged debate over school aid funding is going to be this year?
Oh, that was a good one. I mean, the budget briefing book said the truth about school aid, which just like set the table, like he's ready to pick a fight. But again, it's the governor comes in low, yeah. The legislature comes in high, and somewhere in the middle is the answer that what the ultimate figure will be. I think, you know, once again, the governor is trying to pick a fight, I think, with the school unions at this point and advocates, which he has not had a great relationship with in the past. But again, they'll get something. Maybe it's not the $4 billion that, like, the Campaign for Fiscal Equity lawsuit calls for, but it'll be money.
He got criticism from AQE, which is no surprise.
Yeah, that is the Alliance, that's a standard.
The Alliance for Quality Education, who teamed up with Cynthia Nixon.
They hit Control F4 and right. send out a release criticizing the governor's budget presentation.
That's right.
Yeah.
And also the State Ed Commissioner, Mary Ellen Elia, had some criticism as well. So as Josepha said, this is probably going to be part of a negotiation with the budget. And is it the AIM funding that Dave mentioned? I mean, not only are some towns and villages getting cut, it's getting eliminated right. in a lot of right. places. In fact, I think it's 90% of the villages and towns. So that concerns a lot of local folks for sure.
Let's move on to the accomplishments that the Senate did in that fast start. They passed GENDA, and I believe the day before that, they passed a sweeping set of election reforms that includes early voting, which will come as early as this year. Closure of the LLC loophole, I cannot believe I'm actually saying that, and beginning the process of constitutional amendments to allow for same-day voting registration and no-excuse absentee voting. And a number of Republican senators whose conference had blocked so many of these measures for years and years came out in support of them.
Yeah, not just one or two, I mean, high 40s. I mean, the Democrats have 39. Some of these votes got 48, 47. It's quite a few Republicans who crossed the line. So it makes you think, why didn't this get passed 2 years ago, 4 years ago, 6 years ago?
Well, majority rule in terms of your conference itself, you know, if you can't pass it with your entire conference, the practice in Albany is it doesn't come up. I mean, we see that in the assembly with bills that, you know, if there's not 76 Democrats, well, why do we need to even pass it then? And I think that's what we saw with a lot of those issues.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it goes to show that the Democrats who are in the Senate now aren't all talk. They started their day, their first day at 9:30 in the morning and worked until 7:30 at night. I was not prepared. I don't know about you guys.
Right. Yeah. It was different, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it seems that this momentum isn't stopping yet. I mean, we have a jam-packed week right. next week. And a lot of these things that they've been, like, rallying against for years and years and beating the drum on, they're actually doing, which is government when it wants to work, it can actually work, which is weird.
Like Josepha is saying, Tuesday's agenda includes the Reproductive Health Act, which stalled in the state Senate, Comprehensive Contraceptive Coverage Act on Tuesday as well, and then Wednesday is the DREAM Act, as well as legislation dealing with teacher evaluations and school testing, things that just you didn't see happen this early ever.
We're not hearing a lot from Republicans, of course, since they're not in control of any of the legislative chambers. But there was a moment in the state of the state slash budget address where Cuomo was speaking to the crowd and essentially was just speaking to the Democrats, saying, using the pronoun, you know, we. And I know for a fact that we talked to a number of Republicans afterward who just said, you know, what about us? I mean, Jim Tedisco of Schenectady called it the most partisan speech he's ever heard. He also said that last year. But that, you know, there was a feeling that they were certainly excluded.
It was definitely downstate focused with the MTA and a lot of these issues. It was centered around New York City and its surrounding suburbs, which is sort of the economic engine for the rest of the state as well.
So what's coming up? We have, Dave mentioned the Reproductive Health Act and comprehensive contraceptive coverage.
Nice job.
Thank you. what else will we see in the weeks ahead? One significant announcement is that the Senate and the Assembly are going to hold joint hearings into sexual harassment, which will no doubt be heavily attended.
Right, and this is something that advocates have been calling for over a year now at this point. There's been a string of high-profile sexual harassment cases in Albany, and advocates have been wanting, you know, their day before the legislature to say the laws that have been passed last year, while they were claimed to be historic and progressive and first in the nation, have giant gaps in them. So this is the first time that we will get to see the legislature actually listen to women and men who have been, you know, victims of other lawmakers and how the state government has perpetually hidden it. So it's going to be a big deal, and I think it's sort of maybe Albany's moment of reckoning where this is our dirty laundry, air it out in front of everyone. How are we going to deal with it?
Another bill I'm watching to come down the pike is the Child Victim Act. We don't actually have new bill text for 2019. This is something that's passed the Assembly before, has languished in the state Senate. It was in the governor's budget. Talking to advocates, they say they're still working with legislators and would like to see a bill passed by January 30th, which is a promise a lot of Senate Democrats have made. So that's going to be a contentious issue. We saw this week some debate over whether the governor's proposal would include a look-back period for public schools.
As opposed to, you know, churches or religious organizations.
And so, I mean, that could be one of the fights that we see going on in the legislature as we try to resolve this, or whether it does get done in the budget, because it is in the budget proposal.
Geez, what are we going to be talking about in June? I mean, what's going to be left? It poses the question, you know,
Close the shop early.
Yeah, don't suggest it, because, of course, we will have another reform that was made, a combined primary date. Next year, which means that there's going to be probably a lot more campaigning in the late spring. So.
And one thing to look forward to is we've got all the budget hearings coming up, in fact, starting next, I think, Tuesday or Wednesday, environmental conservation. Looking forward to economic development, Tin Cup Day, so that's just around the corner.
I'm glad it makes you happy.
Yeah, I like those.
One thing that we haven't mentioned yet is the rather big news, especially around here in the Capital Region, that Kirsten Gillibrand, Congresswoman from up around here, turned appointed senator, turned winning U.S. senator now for a decade, has thrown her hat into the ring. Tuesday afternoon in an interview with Stephen Colbert, she said that she was launching an exploratory committee. She will spend this weekend in Iowa pressing the flesh. What advantages will she have, and what hurdles does she have to overcome in her presidential
bid? I think Kirsten Gillibrand has been able to sort of navigate the political waters. She started out as a corporate lobbyist. She has a lot of ties to Wall Street, and now she has sort of reconfigured herself into being more in tune with the progressive left and taking on sexual harassment and women's issues and being on the forefront of that, especially after coming out with her telling everyone that Al Franken should resign. But it's going to be interesting to see her coming to terms with her past and how the progressive left is going to react to the fact that she has close ties to Wall Street. She was a corporate lawyer, and how that's going to be different this time around and how she's going to bill herself.
She was the congresswoman from a district that no longer exists, but used to be went from Lake Placid to Poughkeepsie. She had a high grade from the NRA. She talked about having, her gun underneath her bed. Those are things that she's going to have to reconcile with. But one advantage she has right now is she's getting out there early, because this field is going to be huge. She, 15, 16 is big as probably the Republican field, if not bigger, in 2016. So that's one thing she's got going.
And her campaign has sort of said that the lesson from 2018 was the importance of women.
Right.
Women make up about 60% of the Democratic primary. Like Josepha says, she's really leaned into that. She's played up her role as a mom. She's played up a lot of women's issues. So theoretically, that's her line. We also talked about Wall Street, her connection there. You're going to need money, and, you know, if she's going to need money, that's a great way to get it. I think that we've also saw that she's popular in New York State. She outperformed the governor recently. Granted, she had a much weaker opponent, but I think there's a lane for her. But like everyone said, it's a really crowded field, so she's going to have to throw some elbows.
Of course, before election, literally only 2 weeks before she went on Colbert to say she was considering running, she said that she would serve out her full six-year term if reelected. She was asked about that in an appearance at a Troy Diner, and she gave an answer that was very long and very zigzaggy. Is she going to continue to get that question on the trail?
I don't think so. I think
only from us, probably.
Yeah, only from reporters who care. But I think the public doesn't care about that. Right. And as long as she continues to do her work as a senator and as a candidate, I don't think the public cares that she said that she wasn't going to run and then changed her mind.
Cuomo was pressed in an interview Thursday, I think Brian Laird in New York City, about, you know, he was trying to push, hey, are you going to support Kirsten Gillibrand? This is a senator from our state here. You know, he was noncommittal, of course, to anybody. He's mentioned his great respect for Joe Biden, who he's worked with
on
a couple different projects.
Didn't that seem like an endorsement last time when he talked about Biden?
He kind of pushed back a little bit on there, step back, I should say.
Yeah.
I haven't endorsed anyone yet, he said. But
Biden would be the perfect choice, and great.
he owes Biden a lot, right? Joe Biden has come to him to Albany, to LaGuardia.
Thank you.
For a couple different occasions. So they've been partners on some of the legislation and big projects that Cuomo has pushed.
Her campaign headquarters is in Troy, a city close to all of our hearts. That's important symbolism, I think, right?
Sure. Yeah, and I think Troy is also a city that was once great, then sort of deteriorated and is now in its like renaissance moment. It's a lot of young people, trendy restaurants, and Matt, what are you going to say?
I'm just laughing because I'm a Saratoga native and just feel a lot of just
make Troy great again. I can't
It's a wonderful suburb of Albany, according to Politico.
That's right. Yeah, that hurts. All right, well, that is where we're going to have to leave it. Thanks very much to Dave Lombardo from the Times Union, Josefa Velasquez. Be on the lookout for the debut of The City, and of course, Matt Ryan.
All right, time now for this week's New York Now poll question. Would you consider voting Kirsten Gillibrand for president? Tell us at nynow.org. Last week's poll question asked if you would like to see Roe v. Wade codified into the state's constitution. And two-thirds said yes. Deborah in Hudson, who is in the best position to make decisions about my body? Me. Karen in West Shazee, watching on Mountain Lake PBS, said, it is every woman's right to have an abortion, especially when the reasoning is due to rape or even that she cannot afford to care for the child. And finally, Larry in Binghamton, watching on WSKG, voted no, saying, abortion stops a beating heart. It is murder. To vote this week, again, just head to nynow.org. It's where we have all of our past programs, as well as our broadcast of this week's State of the State and Budget Address. On our website, you'll also find links to us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And you'll find a link to the Capital Confidential blog, also available at timesunion.com.
All right, we say goodbye with more footage from Tuesday's State of the State. I'm Casey Seiler.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.